And I said, well, you know what I really need to do? I really need to get in some... I'm just gotten back from England. I work for the Dailies, you know, and I said, I've rode with them, but I figured, I needed to learn more about dressage and get more experience. And so I decided I'd go to England. And I spent a year there, and I think it did me a lot of good. But now what I need to do is to get with a show or a training stable and just get that sort of experience, because I didn't get to show with the Dailies. And he said, well, I tell you, these show stables can't compete with the thoroughbreds. And then he started, now he didn't mention, see, he went off again. Instead of saying anything straight to me, he went off again. He said that we can't compete with the thoroughbred stables. So the girl can come down here, any girl that can sit on a horse and can halfway ride, can come down here and gallop horses from 6 until 11 in the morning and be through. She worked 5 days a week, and then she can spend the rest of her time galloping one horse here and another horse there and make $500 to $550 a week. And he says, we can't compete. We can't get people to ride. We can't afford to pay them that much. And I said, well, you know, I gave up a long time ago any idea of making money from horses. I've got so much, you know, I want to just learn. I've got a lot to learn, and I want to just work where I can learn something. I think galloping a horse around a racetrack is about the most boring thing you can do. He says, yeah, I think so too, but you know, that's what they want to do. And he says, but I've got a girl coming down from Virginia to help me. But I can't, I'm cutting back my stock. Because I used to do a lot of showing. But I don't do it anymore because I can't find a rider. So I just can't find a rider. Says, I've got this girl coming down from Virginia, but she'll only stay. What she does, she goes up there and teaches in Virginia. In the Maryland area, really, teaches during the summer and trains. But she can't. She loves to hunt, and she won't leave the hunting. And she won't leave the hunting. She says, I'm finding out that I can't. All the money I earn during the summer, I spend feeding my horses during the winter. Because it gets freezes over, she can't ride, and she obviously doesn't have any sort of indoor school. So now, he says, I can get her down here during the months when the ground's frozen and they can't hunt. And then she goes back and says, I can't, you know, she's good. When she first came to me, she didn't even know how to lead a horse. But now she's pretty good. But I can only get her a few months. And says, I can make so much more money if I can show these horses before I sell them. I feel it's just, it hurts me to sell these horses to these training stables because they get all the glory. And they know where the horses come from, you know, but they get the glory for it, for the training and everything. I just break them. But if I could get a rider, I could do more. And then he went back and he showed us the Palomino horse, one of the Palominos again, he said, as a dressage horse. And he says, how much dressage have you done?
That's the line again.
And I said, well, I can do up intermediate. I haven't ever done any competitions outside the school, but I got, Mr. Tilt was generous with his marks with me in competitions in the school, and I can see, you seem to think that I could school a horse pretty well in basic dressage. And he said, well, you know, that was what he needed, was somebody who could start from the beginning. He said this a whole lot earlier, that what he needed was somebody who could start a horse from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Not somebody that could take a horse and then take it on, but somebody that could start a horse. And I said, I take the time and do and school horse and basic schooling. And then we got talking off about something else. He says, I've got to take you over and show you the other farm. So we piled in the car again, and he took us off and said, now I'll show you some of the country. And he said, before I take you over to the other farm, we drove up and we got up to the turnoff that would go into the other farm, and all of a sudden he'd turn around, he wanted to show us his old place. So we drove back and turned down another turning and went past, and he said, now this is my old farm. It was beautiful, just beautiful, all built up and the fencing, paddocks and everything. He says, now Miss Vanderbilt came down here last year looking for a broodmare, and I showed her my horses, and she saw this place. And now she bought the farm instead of the horse. And he says, now this is her farm now. And he says, I said, well, you really haven't, you just gotten built, started building over at the other place, because there weren't any jumps or anything over at the other place. He says, yes, I've just really gotten started. I've gotten a pen that I'm going to fix up into a jumping lane and so forth. But I haven't really got my schooling fences and everything up yet. And he took us on, and he showed, there were a couple of other farms, and he mentioned them. He says, I got a horse there. All they have is thoroughbreds. All these farms, just thoroughbreds. And then he took us over, he took us over to his other place. And he'd been waiting for this guy that he keeps over to other place to come over and get some grain, and he'd never seen him show up. And when he came, well, he was showing us that stallion, and he didn't see him come, but he said he saw him once we got over there, and he saw the truck loaded up with hay, and he says, well, I reckon he must have come while we were doing something else. Yeah. He says, well, you get out and open the gate there, and I'll drive out and show you these horses. So I got out and opened the gate, and he drove through, and we got back in the car, and he drove up off, and he says, now that's a thoroughbred two-year-old. That's a Palomino two-year-old filly. I'm hoping to ship her to either England or Germany. And those are some little Welsh ponies. I don't know why she has those ponies, but she does. This is a woman out in California. He has a lot of horses that are hers. He breeds for her, you know. She owns them and he breeds them. And he says, he drove on a little bit, and he says, now that old horse I got in a trade. They traded me this horse and some, you know, for thoroughbred hunter. And it's a real nice quarter horse mare, and I expect to get some. I expect to find a home for her soon. You see, he sells almost all these, and he pointed out one horse, and he says, now that's an old horse. He's quarter horse, half thoroughbred, and he is the best lead pony for these young horses. He's a really nice lead pony, quiet. He's put the young horses beside him and take him out the first time. So he's really good. And there were about 20 horses in that field. He showed us every one of them.
Oh, really?
Every one of them. And we drove out, and we got out by the water trough, and most of them were Palomino. And all of a sudden, they broke. And they just came galloping past us. This whole group of Palomino horses just galloping past us. Oh, she was. I know she was. And she said, you know. And then he drove on, and they followed the car back and just grouped themselves around us so we could see them. And oh, they were pretty. And he would point at them. That colt's a nice colt. I'm going to, you know, I'll keep him for a while, and then I'm going to sell him. And he drove off up to the brow of the hill. We were back at the back of the pasture. He drove up to the brow of the hill. He says, now this farm runs from this that fence line up there, there's a good bit up, down to that grove of trees down there beyond where we've got the oats plant. He'd shown us the oats coming up. And about that time, Suzanne says, I thought I saw an owl back there. She says, yeah, you probably did. They hang around here. And he swung his car around and sitting there in the middle of the field a little further over, there's another one. He said, well, there's your friend, Suzanne.
She
says, yeah, an owl just sitting out there in the middle of the field. He says, they sit and watch the gopher holes. And he was just sitting out there in the middle of the field, you know, looking like an Audubon friend or something. It was closest I've ever seen an owl. It was pretty. It was, I don't know what it was. It was gray and had white bars all over it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what. But then he took his back on over and he said, well, we started back and he said, you know, there's another opening besides just riders around here. He said, there's nobody teaching. And I said, I noticed. And he said, and, you know, somebody could come down here and open up a riding school and make their fortune. He said, it's just, there aren't any, there's no one to teach. And these children of these people that own these thoroughbreds, they aren't interested in going out and watch their horse gallop around the ring, circle. So they want to ride. And they're a lot of these people that ride Western are switching to English because of the jumping. But there's nobody to teach them. And I get stuck. I sell a horse to these people. And then they keep coming back to me.
Uh-huh.
He says, they keep coming back to me. The horse you sold us was perfect all right when we bought it, but it's doing this now. It won't load in the trailer now.
Yeah.
What do we do? It won't load in the trailer. What do we do? It ran away with my child.
Yeah.
What do we do? It started refusing its fences. What do we do now? He says, there's nobody to teach them. And I can't teach them. I'm raising horses for professionals. He raises for these big training stables. He's not interested in selling to individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why he's not interested. He says he's done it in this area, and they just don't know enough, and they keep coming back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost has to
sit.
He didn't say it like that. He talked about that. When we were driving over, he was talking about how if he sold a horse privately, they'd come back to him. And he was real light on it. And then later, he was talking about the riding school and how they didn't have one, didn't have anybody to teach them. He says, what they need to do is to have somebody you could sell them the horse and keep it and bring them on through. And I said, yeah, and when they won a few ribbons, well, you'd have it made. And you would. He says, yes, and this is wide open for anybody that wants to come in and do that. And I said, mm-hmm. And I thought about it. See, I'm taking about four or five students now, and I've just been pressed.
Yeah.
You know, and I know how much interest there is in it. I thought about it, but I said, I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to do is learn. I want to ride for somebody that knows more than I do. I want to learn more about it. I'm not ready to just settle in. And he said, yeah, that's right. It's for somebody that's older.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it's, a girl like you could ride for years and train. And then we got back, and he said, now, before, I don't know, somehow I missed out. I haven't followed it right. Because before we went out on this, he said something about, he started talking we. For a little stretch. We could take these horses, these young horses, and train them,
mm-hmm.
show them around a bit, and then I'd sell them, and you'd get your share of profit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says, I take you, pay you what you think's a fair price, well, you know, what you think's fair wages, and then train these horses and show them around a bit. And then sell them. When I sold them, you get your commission. And that was the most definite thing he said. Now, that was way back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly when that came in.
Mm-hmm.
But when we got back after all this, I said, well, I've got this thing at Meredith. I can't come. You know, I couldn't. If I would like to be able to just say, kick it, and I'll take courses at UF and, you know, in Gainesville and be here in January. But I can't. I've got, I've already made a commitment to teach at Meredith, but it's just for this one term. And I can be back down here in June. And see, and then, before, when he was talking, and I wouldn't say anything, he made it sound definite. Now, when I made it sound definite, he slipped out from under. And he says, well, we'll keep in touch. And, that was sort of the, way we'll keep in touch.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, I could come down here after Christmas and you could see me ride and tell me I was awful, but you can do that just as well in June. So I sort of let it go.
Uh-huh.
But, and I see, it was for a minute, for a little bit there, when he was talking about it, it was real solid. But then he wouldn't, he, everything, it, all this, it was a weird conversation. You just have a sentence drop, and then you, a little bit of conversation, and you could be off, and he'd be telling you the history of some fold or something. And then he'd come back, another little drop.
Yeah.
But you come out of a thing like that wondering, where the heck do I stand? What we did we say after all that?
Yeah.
We'll keep in touch.
Yeah.
You know.
And he's always, and of course, then he mainly was showing you his beautiful horses and the possibilities.
He was pushing, yes, he showed the possibilities, and he was pushing. He was pushing that.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying, I would like to do, to get these young horses trained before I sell them. I can make more money that way if I can find a rock. See, I've been over there since, too. And he says, what you girls doing? And he says, we sort of said, well, we're just chatting, enjoying the fun. He says, well, he asked me what I think something about how I was doing. I said, all right. And he said, well, come here. I want you to ride a horse.
Right there. Oh, I borrowed it.
And I sort of stood there saying, I said, all right. And, he went in and he said, oh no, I know what it was. He said, how much, something about, oh, how long was I in England? And how did I get over there? And how long was I there? And I said, a year. And then he said, well, come on, I want you to ride a horse. And he took me around so what now? And he got that little buckskin reining horse, which is no good looking horse, but it's, you know, he said he's had it for a while. He fell brought it down to him. They'd just been using it for cattle, and it'd never been spoiled because it'd never been used for anything but just, they didn't cowboy it, they just worked it, worked cattle from it. They didn't bother with any of this playing around or anything. It was a good using horse. And he'd had it for a while, it was a reining horse. And he said, now I'm going to put, I got this saddle over here, that Western saddle, but it's got a bit more of a forward seat, so you'll probably like it better. And he put that on it, and he said, and I'm going to put a snaffle and running martingale on it. You can just ride it like you do reins in both hands, like you do English. And he saddled it up, and oh, he threw the brushes at me. He says, here, you knock the dust off of it while I get the tack.
Oh, I wish you knew him.
He just
got to, guys just got to know my children.
He just, you know, like I was working there all the time. He just threw the brushes at me. He says, you knock the dust off, and I'll go get the tack. So I knocked the dust off. And he got the thing tacked up, and he took it out in the paddock. And he says, now you just get on it and trot it and lope around a little bit. Just do what you please. So I got on it. I walked it around a little bit. And it's, So, it's only 14.2. It's Molly size, but it's rangy. It's not big built like she is, and it has a rough trot, jog, heavy trot. But I managed, and the stirrups, he put them up for me, but we missed it by a notch. And so I was really riding practically without stirrups, and that's always worse because you tend to reach down for the stirrup with your tail. I should have fixed them. I could have gotten off and fixed them, but anyway, I jogged him a little bit and worked him. You know, did a few circles, and then I was doing the sort of reins in one hand. And he said, "Well, go ahead and take them in both hands," and I did. And I was tense. Because I was tense from the morning and worrying about having to ride in front of Mr. Snyder when I do ride in front of him.
Yeah.
And then he'd come out and ride in front of Mr. Hetherington, who is...
And Mike Tilton.
And Mike Tilton. And Mike Tilton, too. And his son out there.
You came in, you said, "I'm too
tough
to teach this."
And... But I managed to, I wasn't so tight that I couldn't ride the horse. I could relax enough to do that. And funnily enough, usually it shows up in the sitting trot. But this time, when I put him into a lope, I thought I was going to die. He went straight onto his forehand. And in that saddle, with a horse that's on their forehand, there's a real strong tendency either to lean too far forward or lean too far back. And I was determined I was not going to get forward on him. And that saddle was, I don't know, I couldn't have ridden very long at a lope. I would have had blisters. It was just, you know, I couldn't just stay with the saddle. And I was trying to relax my back, but I was leaving the saddle a little bit, and it was really rough. And he fell back into trot. I didn't bring him back into trot. And I was a little bit embarrassed, you know. And I worked some more in the jog trot, and began to relax and began to enjoy it. And I put him into a lope a couple more times, and he took his lope easily. Of course, I used the signal Mike told me he used.
Uh-huh.
He didn't tell me that today. He didn't even mention that today. I remembered it from last
right
time.
Right hand rein, left knee, wasn't it?
Well, which way are you going?
inside knee, right, and...
No, it's outside. He puts the legs in the same position I do, but instead of touching them with the inside leg, he touches them with the outside leg.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Well, the horse knew. We made the right lead every time.
I would have done the other way.
No, that's what surprised me about it, because he said he used the outside leg.
Now, I would have sworn he said inside. Outside rein, inside leg.
He doesn't use the reins, you see.
He lifts the reins,
but he doesn't use them in any direction. He just lifts
the reins.
And the outside leg with the inside leg is against the girth. I touch with the inside leg.
Yeah.
I have my legs in the same position, but I touch with
yeah.
the inside leg,
yeah.
and he touches with the outside leg.
All
right, but it worked.
That's a Western saddle.
Yeah, that's a Western saddle. And,
you have to take your own saddle
off. Yeah.
Well, gosh, you didn't know my children was going to ask you to ride.
No, I didn't.
Cool. In front of
Mr. Hetherington.
He said, "Call him any day. He'd come up any day."
Yeah, he said any afternoon. He worked those two colts in the morning, but afternoons he was free after 11 o'clock. I said, "Well, I'll get you up there."
Are you right?
Yeah. And, he was so funny when I first walked up to him. He sort of ducked his head and says, "I sort of missed you all that Saturday morning." I said, "Well, you know, we understood you got to go to a sale, and that was what, you know, we were happy you got to go." He says, "I know you wanted to," and he says, "Well, it wasn't so much that, but I told this man I'd go up and help him choose a horse, and I forgot that when I told you I could go Saturday." And I said,
"Why don't you just do like the other dudes? Just get your job running, exercise."
I couldn't stand that.
Well, you can spend the money.
I'm not interested in money. I don't care a thing about money. I really don't. What I'm interested in is learning about and jumping and dressage and working with the horse and control.
And you were interested in how he talked about training.
Yeah, well, he trains hunters and jumpers, and he takes them from the time that they're born up till they're about 3 years old, doing their first showing, and then he sells them. And what he likes to do, he said he liked to do, is to show them and get them up to their first season in the big shows and then sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is what I thought I might do. I might be able to get a fairly decent horse and a yearling and train it and get it up to its first season and sell it showing. But that wouldn't be anything near as good as working for him when he's got these really much better than I would ever be able to afford as a yearling.
Mm-hmm.
And then see, if I were to buy one horse to start as a yearling, the chances of it's getting up to really the competition that I need, small. But when he has four horses a year, he says he doesn't want to have more than four horses in work.
In training.
He has a whole lot of horses. I mean, you know, he says, but he doesn't want more than four or five horses up. He doesn't ride. That's why he needs riders. He trains. But a trainer doesn't necessarily ride. So is what to do to get the horse to perform. And a good rider, and the rider that can work with a trainer. I think this is one reason Joni Boyce has done so well. If you find a trainer that you can work with and who knows more about it than you do, he'll make your name for you.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you can follow his instructions and show his horses for him, then everybody looks and says, well, there's a good rider. And, of course, all the top people know the trainer and know his horses, but they also look at his riders. And the rider gets a lot of the credit that should go to the trainer.
Oh, yeah.
And the ability to follow the word of a trainer and to carry out what he wants and to see what he wants and be able to do it. Of course, now, eventually, that becomes the ability to train a horse yourself. I mean, because you've got to be able to see perfectly what the trainer wants to do it.
Yeah.
I've always, for instance, with Mr. Daly's horses, I can train a horse for Mr. Daly. Because I already know before I get on the horse exactly what I want it to do, and I know that that's what he wants it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if he tells me something, I've got a picture of what the horse should be doing and how it should feel underneath me.
Mm-hmm.
A goal. And my goal's the same as his. And so if he tells me something, I can do it. Now, if I were to go to some other trainer whose idea of the finished product was completely different from mine, I couldn't work under it. And it'd take a long time before we would adjust and get to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would do what he would tell me, but I'd do it wrong because I was trying to do a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying for the wrong goal. Like, if for instance, what I have an idea of the way a horse's trot should be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a trainer tells you, this is the moment to loosen the reins, and this is what a lot of training is, you'll be standing around and somebody will be riding a horse around, just trotting, and the trainer will say, well, lengthen your reins a bit. And you've got to know, if you know what the horse should feel like, you're the one that's going to know. You see, when you lengthen the reins, just that right amount.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, if you lengthen the reins on a horse that's let's say you shorten the reins on a horse that's not accepting the bit properly, and he picks his head up and begins to go, gets behind the bed, and his action gets bad. Then the rider should, you know, if I know what I'm feeling for a smooth, even trot, I'd let the horse go back down again. Maybe just a little bit. Maybe not even enough for the trainer to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But if what he wants is a high trot and he doesn't care if the horse is above the bit, then it's going to take us a long time before we we get on before I'll do what he wants me to do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I will, for instance, if I'm working for a horse to have nice, long, and level trot, and a trainer starts saying shorten the reins, sit him more, push him onto the bit more, all right. If I feel that this trot is not right, then I won't do it. I mean, I, as a rider, I would believe, sincerely believe, the trainer didn't want it done.
Uh-huh.
So I would be slow about doing perhaps what he wanted done. Now, he might want be aiming for something else, and I not see it. And since I don't see it, I couldn't adjust and do what he wanted me to do. I mean, he could give me the exact instructions, and if I don't see what he's aiming towards, I can't do it.
So you have to work pretty closely with your trainer. You have to see a light.
You have to see a light.
You're doing the riding, or the rider's doing the riding. The
rider's doing the riding, but he has to see like the trainer. He has to see and feel the horse like the trainer.
I have an idea.
Older men don't. He was telling about some Polish army captain who came over here to teach, to give dressage. Instruction. He's Italian, army captain. He designed a forward seat saddle, and he brought it over here and was going around to the various hunt clubs teaching forward seat when it was first introduced. And he said his English wasn't very good, but he couldn't ride. He had a wooden leg, and But even before the leg was amputated, he couldn't ride.
Mm-hmm.
He became a captain in the Italian army in the infantry. He was not a cavalryman.
Mm-hmm.
And he really could not ride a horse, but he could instruct.
Mm-hmm.
He could teach. And he said this is he was at one of these hunt clubs, and a very rich woman was taking lessons, and she working with a horse, and his Italian was very thick. He had a very thick Italian accent, and a lot of people couldn't understand him, and she couldn't understand him. He kept saying to do something, he kept saying this over and over again. She says, "Well, sir, I can't understand you. If you would just get on the horse and show me." He says, "Madam, I am here to tell you how to do it." Often there are trainers that cannot ride. Their ability is to tell somebody else how to ride. When I got off, he said, "Looks like you got on that horse all right." I said, "Yes, nice horse, sweet." And Mike was gone back to the trailer, and he came out. I went to go find him, thank him for letting me ride. And he came out and he said, "Well, Maya said she got on with him all right." And just real level. And Mike says, "Yeah," and I said, "Yeah." You know, I felt awful tight on him, you know, real tense. And he says, "Well, you were relaxed on him." And you got a pretty deep seat and hands still.
Mm-hmm.
What was behind that? So see, there was nothing beyond that. Nothing.
Yeah.
You got no clue. No clue at all. Whether they were just thinking, you know, well, if she sticks around,
mm-hmm.
you don't know whether they're thinking maybe looking for a rider, or whether they're looking just to see what the horse would do, or what. You got no clue.
Maybe you just enjoy riding.
Or maybe I just enjoy riding, yeah.
That was Saturday night, 13th of December, 69. Saturday night, 13th of December, 69. Channel 2 over, 580. Channel 2 over, 580. Saturday night after supper, the 13th of December, 69, is Channel 2 over, 585.
This is Sunday at noon. Well, afternoon, the riders got in a little late. This has got a splitter in the foot or something. They had to walk Sunday the 14th of December, 69. Just at lunch at the kitchen table, Sunday the 14th of December, 69. And the height came up, but as I remember, it was before the statement was that this Western, I know Barbara was interested. She was talking about a visit yesterday to Western with Mike Tilton and Mr. Snyder. And from what she said, it just occurred to me again, you know, not exactly true, but it was close to what that little statement we had worked on with Suzanne, that country music is a way of life. We made some little progress on that, except we diverted it. Now this Western riding is comfortable. Makes a person feel at home, as Mike Tilton represented. And it's a way of life.
What got me started, I was thinking last night. Been over to Mike Tilton's and to Mr. Snyder's, and you can feel the sort of different atmosphere. And I know last night you were sort of left with the impression that Mr. Snyder was a bit of a power salesman.
Somewhat.
And I was thinking, one of the reasons I got that impression, for one thing, was all the names that would come into it, like Kathy Kussner and the Vanderbilts and Wally Holly and various other people that came into the conversation. And I'd noticed the same sort of thing with Mr. Daly.
Quite a name.
So many names like that, that just big names, like Kathy Kussner's on the United States Equestrian Team. She's the top woman rider in the country. And he didn't say that. All he did say she rode for him once, or had ridden for him. And Vanderbilt had bought his old farm just across down the road a bit. And he took us by and showed it to us. He'd come down there to look for a horse, and he bought the farm instead. And these things come up, and he'd talk about his horses, and he couldn't really talk about much about the horses he had, because they were young horses or brood mares, and they hadn't done anything. All they'd done is, you know, they're just growing up, they're just there. And all you can talk about a young horse, to tell it about somebody, you can say, well, it's pretty, it moves well. And after you've said that, then you can say who its sire and its dam were and what they've done. Or if it's a brood mare, you can talk about what its foals have done. So he had to talk. He really, if he was going to tell us about the horses, and he wanted to, then he had to talk about not the horses that were there, but the ones that weren't there, the ones he'd sold. You get this, and this, I sold full brother to one of the big training stables last year, and he went into his first big show at Upperville. It's one of the colts he was showing me. He said this one's full brother went to his first big show at Upperville, Virginia, and came out grand champion in the green working hunter. And you just thought, well, if you know anything about horse shows, Upperville horse show is one of the biggest. I mean, you know, a horse that can pull grand championship there is quite a horse. And then he had these Palominos colts, and he says, we can't sell them in this country because of the color barrier, and the judges won't pin Palominos in the hunter and jumper classes, or in the hunter classes. So we sell them to England and Germany because they like them over there. He says, you know, the horse that started that was Nautical. And this is this famous jumper that Bill Steinkraus had. Or no, I'm sorry, not Bill Steinkraus. Wally. Hugh Wally's horse. And he's retired now, but he was very, very popular because he had a flashy way of going, and he was a Palomino. And he said, so we sell a lot of these Palominos in England and Germany. And after a while, after you, if you aren't, I haven't been around Mr. Daly for a while. And I've been around all these people around here. And after a while, names like Kustner, Vanderbilt, and Meade, and on, and England and Germany, and I just couldn't believe it anymore after a while, you know. But it wasn't, you know, you thought, well, Lord, he's dropping it. I mean, he's just putting these names in here to impress you. He's just putting them in here to make you going to talk about him. And he can't say anything any more than Buster can talk about a truck without saying whose truck it is. That told Frank the fish were jumping. He can say his name. And Snyder's the same way. He's got to give the concrete thing, and he just gives one case after another. Mike Tilton you get the feeling. Now this made me a little nervous at Snyder's. You know,
mm-hmm.
A bit too ritzy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I said when we first went to Mike Tilton's that I felt so relaxed there. It was just an easy place to go and an easy place to stay. And yet, even so, I had the feeling that there was something about Mike that was not quite real. About that easiness, that it was a bit too much of a good thing. Because the first day we went, he just accepted, you know, like we've been there all along. And heck, he went yesterday when we went over and he had me ride that horse. And just as if, you know, just as if I were an old friend come along and he had a horse he thought I might enjoy riding, and he let me ride the horse. And
nothing professional about it.
Nothing professional, no.
Or examination. Not an examination.
No, it's just put me on the horse and let me ride. He disappeared. He went to the trailer and went to sleep. But Milo stayed out there and watched me and worked with this little. He couldn't resist going and getting that colt out to work in front of Suzanne, show her how he worked on the colt. He couldn't. He just couldn't resist it. He just had to go do it. Just to show her how he did it. And this is where he's different, I think, from Mike. He will talk about the horses he's worked with. And he'll get out and sort of show you how he works with the colt. And he's proud of it. And you can see he's proud of it. You can see he's showing off a little bit. And, he'll talk about the people he's worked for up in Canada. And teaching this woman to ride in New York that had never been on a horse and had it was funny, there was two stories. Said he took him a long time to learn to ride. I mean, to not to ride, but to talk and tell people how to ride.
Oh, yeah. That was nice.
Yeah. He said it took him a long time to learn how to do that. But that now he had taught this woman who'd just gotten, she was over in her 40s, and she just decided she wanted to learn to ride. And he had taught her and given her this confidence, you see, to ride. She'd had some real bad experiences. She'd tried to just get on a horse and learn to ride. And she'd gotten thrown. She'd had broken arm, broken leg, all sorts of things. Because you just can't do that unless you just get a real, real quiet horse, and obviously she hadn't. And so he taught her to, she got him a teacher, and he taught her, and he says, now that they've got, this is in New York, and he says, this place has a cross-country course set out in the field, about 400 acres, and they got this course set out around the acreage. And he said, and now she takes that horse of hers, and they go out, and she can jump every one of those things. Never have a bit of trouble. She says she's just as happy as she can be. But it took him a long time to learn how to tell somebody that. And then there was Mr. Snyder's story earlier about the Italian army captain who couldn't ride. He even had a wooden leg. He couldn't even get on a horse. And was teaching a similar woman, had a hunt club in New York. And his accent was so thick she couldn't understand what he was saying. And she finally said, sir, if you will just get on and show me how to do it. And he says, madam, my place is to tell you how to do it. And he could, if she could get through the Italian accent. He could. And this is where he was a great teacher. He was not a good writer.
That's a nice case, is Faye.
Yeah.
A little bit off point. Yeah.
Now, all of that sounds right authentic, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would raise this one point. The reaction that you spoke of last night about Mr. Snyder's horses, they didn't need to perform. Just to look at them, and that little herd of palominas that broke and ran and came back up and looked at you through the truck, seemed to me to be all you needed.
Well,
and Suzanne,
no, it's not. Not if you can't. You can tell some things by looking at a horse. He had, he wanted to show us, he showed us every horse he had. And the first one that really, there were a lot of little colts and weanlings and so forth. The first one that really the ones that made impressions, I guess, were the stallions, mainly because he took us back and showed them to us about three or four times. He couldn't leave them alone.
Yeah.
And he took us in, the first one he wanted to show us was a thoroughbred stallion. And he took us in and just opened the gate and we walked into the paddock with the stallion. Beautiful, beautiful horse. And he didn't bother to show us how that horse moved. He got him to pose, he posed him. You know, got him to stand right so that we could see him. Oh, he was pretty. Beautiful horse. Chestnut, dark chestnut, liver chestnut. And no white markings on him at all.
Mm.
And hunter type thoroughbred, not racing thoroughbred. He's not built like First Blay at all. He's much more compact and rounded. He's not quite so angular. And just fine, satiny coat. Beautiful coat. And then after we'd had a chance to see him, he was talking, I don't know, heaven knows what, I've forgotten everything. You see, he just talked continually, and I can't remember everything he said. While he was talking, the stallion nibbled at his coat a bit, and then he decided he'd come over and see us. We were standing right beside him. It was only a matter of turning his head. And he sniffed at me for a bit and came up, sniffed up my hairline up here. And then he reached down and he's just gentle eyes, nothing, no harm at all in his eyes. And he got hold of my coat and he picked it up between his front teeth. And he wouldn't let go. He didn't come on. And Mr. Snyder talking away, and I said, now, about time you let go. And I reached up under and stuck my thumb in his mouth, you know, to get him to open his mouth. And he wouldn't let go. Mr. Snyder started walking off toward the gate, and I still had this horse on my shoulder.
Stallion.
And I was trying to get his mouth open, and he'd sort of play with the coat, you know, tug at it. I could just see the coat's not too strong. I could just see it ripping, you know. Finally, I got him to let go, and he followed me all the way to the gate, trying to get my clothes. Trying to get something to hold, to grab and nip at. Mr. Snyder, the only comment Mr. Snyder made was after, you know, this took about 5-10 minutes. We were standing there talking, and all the time we were talking, the horse had hold of my coat. I wasn't in too much of a hurry to get him off. I just let him hold on to it. And then I finally got it, you know, we talked for a little bit, and then I finally, when Mr. Snyder headed over toward the gate, I finally got him to let loose. And
Mr. Snyder's unconscious.
Yeah, he was conscious. He could see it. He just didn't say anything.
He figured
it's perfectly obvious that I knew that the horse wasn't you know, out to just take my arm off, and that I could handle it. And I wasn't worried. I was just telling the horse, why don't you, you know, look, sir, why don't you let go of my coat? And it didn't bother me, so it didn't bother Mr. Snyder. I was kind of careful. I just wouldn't let him go close to Suzanne. When he first grabbed, he let go and looked over at Suzanne, and I sort of made him come back to me because I wasn't going to let him get close to Suzanne. We had a sweater on. He took a parting nip at my jacket as we went through the gate. Mr. Snyder, about that time, says, yeah, he'll take your clothes right off of you if you can stay around him long enough. That was the only comment he made, you know. This is about until the very, very end. That was the only thing I didn't like, though. I noticed almost all his horses, all the horses he had up were nippers.
Oh.
And he's just so easygoing, and thoroughbreds tend to be nippy anyway, that he doesn't do anything about it much. And they were all would reach out and take your clothes.
Mr. Snyder's so easygoing.
Well, he wasn't rough with any of them. And you see that the only one he was rough with was one Palomino that he's says he wants to start with some basic work and dressage and get ready to sell. And that was the only one he was rough with, and that horse, I think, is more than just a nipper.
Mm-hmm.
He looked to me like he'd be willing to take a hunk out of you. He didn't try to, but I know Mr. Snyder went in. The minute he did anything, he was threatening him with his hand up here. And he slapped him once.
Mm-hmm.
And that horse, I have a feeling, would have been willing to do a bit more. Stallions do this. It's a way of showing affection. You can't get around it. It's just a lot of stallions do it, and that's one of the signs of a horse that has been gilded late is that he'll nip at you.
Is that right?
He'll grab hold of your clothes and excuse it. If you're around stallions much, you learn to just excuse it or just take the bruises. They miss occasionally, but that's one of the. We had a Wilkes that was gilded late, and he'd lick you all over. He'd learned he was too much of a gentleman to actually nip, but he would open his mouth and put it on your sleeve.
Yeah.
Just put, rest it right there, and then he would lick you all over. He'd just come right up neck and get up behind your ear. he was funny, and he was so sweet. You can never be mad at him for it, you know. He was Palomino.
Palomino.
Palomino stallion.
Yeah.
And he was big, and he had good muscles, nice muscles, and kind of nice square lines.
Yeah.
And he had a fine sort of Arabian-type head that really looks nice on a big horse. And, oh, he was pretty. And then he had...
And he had him trot for him?
Yeah. He didn't move all that well, actually. He hadn't been worked. He doesn't even move nice, but he hadn't been worked. He hadn't even been under saddle lately. And he moves better under saddle, but He did move well. He was a beautiful, he's a beautiful horse.
It wasn't so much name calling, it was just looking at the horses.
By the time we were looking at these horses, you realized he was talking. Solid. And a lot of what he said was not about the horses in front of you, and it got to be. And then we'd go and look at young horses, and it would not be. It would be talk about their brothers and sisters. And then you'd get what they were doing. Of course, that time. Now you see, it's so easy to get. All the time, you can look at him, and he had that same look in his eye that Mike Tilton does.
Oh.
It's friendly. There's nothing in his eyes. And Mr. Daly has. There's nothing in his eyes that's in his expression that he's scheming or treat me like a customer. No, he's talking about his horses to you. If you just look at it, I think I just got overpowered more than anything. For one thing, Mike Tilton only had 4 or 5 horses to show us. This man had 30 or over.
And all beautiful.
And all beautiful, and all of them with great brothers and sisters that he had to tell us about. And it wasn't so much the difference, I suppose, as the duration.
Well, y'all were just
between what he was doing and Mike Tilton, just the duration. Mike Tilton was showing us his horses. He talked about the big shows that they won, and
where he was going to take them.
And where he was going to take them, and how long. When the rest of the time we were at Mike's, what he was telling us was. It was really like a lesson. It was pure information. But he told it in that easy manner. He gave it to us like he was giving advice to a friend. Not talking to strangers, but giving advice to a friend. And toward the end there, he was talking about how he and his family had always done it. Or he had raised his family by doing it, and they did it, and his son had been had come down to work with him, and his wife and Sid put up with it, seemed to enjoy it.
A family like country music.
Yeah, that is the same sort of family. That his manner is so easy. None of it seems studied, except that nobody else in the family has it. His son doesn't say a word, not one word. And when he does, it's just I'm going to take that horse here, or I'll fix the martingale for you, or something like that. And he doesn't open at all. And his wife she's pleasant, but she's not open. She's cautious when you begin talking to her. And before she'd have to know you before she would be open with you. And he never saw us before, but he'll take somebody he's never seen before in his life and just be like you've been friends all your life.
And that's different from Mr. Snyder and Mr. Featherington.
Featherington's frank and easy enough. You can almost tell it's because he's used to having people come up and ask him questions. It's that sort of manner. He's a little bit shy about it. But you have to draw him out a little. He's not as quick to step in and talk as Mike is. You don't have to give him an opening. About things like that woman that he taught to ride, or he'll talk about, or he'll actually bring a colt out and work it a little in front of you. just because he sort of needs to do it right that time. And show you how he does it. And
you opened it up. That's nice for you.
It is nice.
That's
something to work on.
Yes. I think on these, you want to decide the question, just want to get into it. Let the question enable you to look into their approaches.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are valid, you know, and they're masters. If I could say the last word, of course, I'd say all of them do it, you know, with good deliberateness. They watch the people they talk to. It has to be studied. It's an art. Talking is an art, just like handling the horses.
Well, I think probably you're right. I mean, Mr. Snyder does it because that's the way he's used to selling horses. And it's an art watching him when I actually ask for the price of a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know. Because I was watching him from that point of view. I wasn't really interested in buying. I was looking at him from a different point of view.
Now that's the end of the talk this Sunday afternoon, the 14th of December 69. The 14th of December 69. In the middle of the afternoon on Sunday, and this is the end of Channel 2 Over. That's the end of this reel, the end of Channel 2 Over. And in the talk about the visits on Saturday, see this horse farm, Mr. Snyder's horse farm, and back to see Mr. Tilton and Mr. Hetherington. They did that yesterday. And this is Sunday, the 14th of December, 69, the end of this reel, the end of Channel 2 Over.